Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a culture icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. I mean, do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a Magic Wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the Magic Wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I've been so obsessed with my Magic Wand, I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago, because now there are multiple iterations of the Magic Wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the Magic Wand Rechargeable, tiny with the Magic Wand Mini, or micro. Micro's really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure.
Men fall in love faster than women do. Men fall in love more often than women do. Men are 2.5 times more likely to kill themselves when a relationship is over. It's exactly the same brain circuitry in men as women, but men just fall faster because they're so visual.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. On today's best of episode, I'm joined by renowned biological anthropologist and author of Anatomy of Love and so many other great books, Dr. Helen Fisher. We discuss so many things in this episode that your brain just might explode. All the questions you might be having about relationships, like is love at first sight possible? How our personality traits shape our attraction to others? And we're going to give you a personality test you can take so you can figure out which personalities you match with. We also talk about the way our biology influences who we fall in love with, the stages of rejection, the right time to define a relationship. We talk about the brain systems that are actually responsible for different kinds of love. Dr. Fisher also shares studies of why you fall in love with one person rather than another. Do you ever think about that? Like, why am I attracted to these kind of people? We also talk about the best times to marry, why orgasms create connection, how you can put some space in your togetherness. We've all been spending a little bit too much time together, right? All good relationships need space. Also, why casual sex isn't really casual. All right, intentions with Emily. For each episode, join me in setting an intention. What do you want to get out of this episode? I set one in every episode, and my intention simply was to get Dr. Helen Fisher here to break down love, attachment, and sex. I can't wait to hear from you of what you think of this episode. And remember, if you want to ask me questions, call my brand new hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. Or 559-825-5739. Just leave me your questions or message me at sexwithemily.com/askemily. Always include your name, your gender identity, location, and age, and how you listen to the show. All right, everybody, enjoy this special episode. Dr. Helen Fisher, PhD, is one of America's most prominent anthropologists and senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute. She's conducted extensive research, written 6 books on the evolution and future of human sex, love, marriage, gender differences in the brain, and how your personality style shapes who you are. She's currently using her knowledge of brain chemistry to discuss the neuroscience of team building, business leadership, and innovation. I've been inspired by Helen Fisher for so many years. I remember when I was starting out doing my show, a long time ago, I was listening to an interview with her on the radio, and I was just stopped my car in the middle of the road and started taking notes. Well, I'm so excited she's joining us today. Welcome to the show, Dr. Helen Fisher. Can we just talk about, to break down to my listeners, like the three basics of love?
Right.
I know you've talked about this for years, and then we're going to build upon this, but the lust, romantic attraction, attachment.
Yeah, I was walking actually in a park in New York City several years ago, and it suddenly occurred to me, I wonder if we've evolved three distinctly different brain systems for mating and reproduction. One is the sex drive, second is feelings of intense romantic love, and the third is feelings of deep attachment. And that all kinds of love, I mean, you know, is some combination of those three. Now, you're not going to be in love with your mother.
Right.
You can just feel deeply attached to your mother. You're not going to want to have sex with your mother, et cetera, et cetera. So there's going to be all different kinds of combinations that we make. But I think that these three basic brain systems evolved, and they evolved for different reasons. I think the sex drive evolved to get you out there looking for a whole range of partners. I mean, you can have sex with somebody you're not in love with. I think romantic love evolved to enable you to focus your mating energy on just one at a time and start the mating process. And I think this feelings of deep attachment evolved to enable you to stick with this person at least long enough to raise a child together as a team. So these things do different jobs. We feel attachment to all kinds of people. What's interesting is when I looked into the brain, romantic love can be triggered instantly. It's like a brain system like the fear system. You can be scared instantly, and you can, boom, you can fall in love
like
instantly.
Like the love at first sight.
Right.
But isn't it more lust at first sight?
I think it's often love at first sight. You know, I do all these studies with Match.
Yes, I know. Let's talk about all your studies.
And one of the questions was, do you believe in love at first sight? Not sex at first sight or lust at first sight, but love at first sight. And over 50% of both men and women said yes. And when I asked the question, has it ever happened to you? I think it's something like 40% of men had said yes, and I think 29% of women or 30% of women had said yes. But you have to be ready for it. I mean, you know, as you grow up, you evolve what I call a love map, an unconscious list of what you're looking for in a partner. And then suddenly the time is right, you're ready to fall in love, and you see somebody who fits within that love map, even somewhat, and they smile at you and they laugh with you, or they crack a joke, and instantly you can trigger that brain circuitry for romantic love and fall madly in love. Not just lust, but in love. And you know, these three brain systems, a lot of people get them mixed up. They feel that lust comes first, and then romantic love, and then feelings of attachment. But these are brain systems. They can operate in any combination. I mean, you have some wonderful friend at school or at work, and it's just a nice attachment, and you feel deeply attached. And then suddenly you're free, they're free, and boom, you can feel romantic love. Then you can feel the sex drive. Or you can fall in love first, and then suddenly everything, once you fall in love with somebody, everything becomes sexual about them.
What if you get stuck, though, in one of these phases? What if you're only, like, in the lust phase? Like, aren't there people who can't move on or can't attach?
Right. I think that different times of life, we're looking for different kinds of things. I mean, I know a guy right now who just really wants to sleep around. That's what he wants
really
to do.
Does,
he just really wants, he does not want any kind of attachment. He had a long attachment to somebody, and he's done with that for the moment. Well, he'll probably get back to it. We'll see. And then there's some people, I call them romance junkies, you know, and they need that thrill, that dopamine high, the elation, the giddiness, the euphoria, the romance. And so as that begins to settle down a bit into a deep attachment, then they'll feel claustrophobic and want to move on. And then there's people, I call them attachment junkies, that can't leave a bad partnership because they're stuck. They have that sense of attachment, even if it's quite abusive. So actually, I think that all three of these brain systems can be perfectly wonderful,
right,
and all of them can be perfectly horrible. I mean, I think you can have a real sex addiction, a real romance addiction, or a real attachment addiction. But when they're working well, and when you've found all three in the same person, that's a beautiful addiction.
Right, exactly. How has this changed? I mean, because this was huge research that you did. It's made a huge impact. And what do you see has been one of the biggest impacts it's had on the way people think about love and attachment, or at least what could people learn from this now? Like, how could they learn about themselves and the way they date and the way they love?
I think my recent research is probably the most important for that. It's on personality. It's nice to know about these three brain systems.
Right.
It's nice to know what's happening to you.
Right.
And it's nice to think a little bit clearly about it and, you know, stay away from things that don't work. I mean, I said to a man last night, I was at this gala, and he said, well, so-and-so, and he broke up. And I said, well, stay broken up. She's not the right person for you.
You could just tell.
I've known their saga for several months, and there's just too much drama.
Right.
And they're both wonderful people, but they're not right for each other right now. And maybe they never will be. So
your person, I love your, we took the personality quiz. For
oh, you did? Oh, how wonderful. I bet you're just like me.
Are you? I don't know. I'm
estrogen
explorer.
Yeah, explorer, negotiator?
Yeah. Explore, negotiate, absolutely, yes. And I knew without even just reading the dopamine, I'm like, yes, I am dopamine.
Yeah.
I wanted to clarify this part. We're going to get into the personality test that Helen Fisher created, but I wanted to explain it to you here so it all makes sense. So her personality quiz is essentially talks about the way you express four broad styles of thinking and behaving. And each one of these behaviors is associated with our four basic brain systems, dopamine, serotonin, testosterone, and estrogen system. So she took those systems, and there are four personality types: the explorer, the builder, the director, and the negotiator. And we're a combination of all of these four traits, but we express some more than others. So when you take this quiz, you might score equally on two or sometimes three, but we tend to, you know, favor one or two. But to break it down for you, so explorers have more of the traits linked with the dopamine system. They're curious, creative, spontaneous, energetic, daring, risk-taking. Builders express more of the traits linked with serotonin system. They're more traditional, conventional, cautious, but not scared. They observe social norms. They follow the rules. They respect authority. They like making plans and schedules. Then we have the directors. And directors have more traits linked with testosterone. These people tend to be analytical, logical, direct, decisive, skeptical, tough-minded, emotionally contained. Then we have the negotiators. They have more of the traits in the estrogen system: holistic, contextual, long-term, and imaginative thinkers. They're good at reading postures, gestures, facial expressions, tone of voice. So you can take the quiz yourself. I just wanted to explain it to you a little bit here before we get in deeper into the test and the personality types.
Match.com came to me and said, why do you fall in love with one person rather than another? And I said, I don't know. I mean, nobody knows. I mean, we do tend to fall in love with people from the same socioeconomic background, same general level of intelligence, same general level of good looks, educational level, same religious and social and economic goals, reproductive goals. But you can walk into a room and everybody's from your background and same level of intelligence and good looks and education. And you don't fall in love with all of them.
All the time.
So, but I began to think to myself, okay, maybe basic chemistry draws you naturally towards one person rather than another. I mean, people will say, well, we have chemistry or we don't have chemistry.
I always want to know what that
means. So what does that mean?
What does it mean, Helen Fisher?
So, Emily, you're so cute. Well, so anyway, what I did is I went through the last 40 years of biological literature looking for any trait at all linked with any biological system. And there's a lot of systems in the brain, but most of them keep the eyes blinking or the heart beating. They're not linked with personality traits. But these four are the dopamine, serotonin, testosterone, and estrogen systems. So I listed the traits of each one of these basic brain systems and made a questionnaire for Match to see to what degree you express the traits in the dopamine, serotonin, testosterone, and estrogen system. Over 14 million people have now taken that questionnaire in 40 countries. And
14 million is quite...
People love questionnaires.
They really do.
They love
back
questionnaires.
Back in Cosmo in the day, right? We all love the quizzes, but now...
And because this one is the only one on Earth that is built on basic brain circuitry. I mean, I know that's bragging, but the bottom line is...
No, you brag. Helen Fisher doesn't brag enough. Jesus. Okay.
Thank you.
Really?
So anyway, so here are the four traits that are linked with each of these systems. And then I was able to watch on Match in all these countries who's naturally drawn to whom. And that's where I had suddenly slipped into Mother Nature's kitchen and begun to figure out why him, why her, why you fall in love with one person rather than another. But anyway,
Why Him, Why Her, which is also, if you guys are interested in this at all and you want more, it is your book, Why Him, Why Her.
Yeah, and the questionnaire is in that. And in much more detail. And how to get along with these people. But anyway, people who are very expressive of the dopamine system, I call explorers. Emily, you're one.
Yes.
I'm one. risk-taking, novelty-seeking, curious, creative, spontaneous. spontaneous, energetic, mentally flexible, and idea generation. These are the people who come up with out-of-the-box ideas, and they're drawn to people like themselves. Explorers want explorers. They want somebody who's going to leap off the couch and, I don't know, go swimming in Central Park or go racing over to Lincoln Center at the, you know, 10 minutes before something's going to start and just go in and plop down, whatever. They want to, you know, take their backpack and go off to Laos and, and look in the woods or whatever. Anyway, the bottom line is the high serotonin. I call these people builders. They like the familiar. They're traditional, conventional. They follow the rules. They respect authority. They think concretely instead of theoretically. They like schedules and plans. They tend to be quite social. And they tend to be religious. Religiosity is actually in the serotonin system.
Yeah.
And these people are drawn to people like themselves. Traditional goes with goes
yeah,
for
that makes sense.
And a good example is Mike Pence or Mitt Romney. I mean, they've married people who are very traditional, like themselves. They follow the rules. They're very structured.
Right.
They're concrete thinkers.
Makes
they're principled.
Well, I'm taking your quiz. Like, do you follow the rules? Like, do you? Like, never, never.
No.
I
mean, I follow the rules if it makes sense to me, but that's about it.
Exactly.
I'm good on the road. I follow the rules of the road.
Mostly.
Mostly. I love them.
Seatbelts.
Oh, Emily, you're great.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, so that type goes for that type. High testosterone goes for high estrogen and vice versa. So people who are very high testosterone tend to be analytical, logical, direct, decisive, tough-minded, skeptical, good at what we call rule-based systems, everything from engineering to computers to math to mechanics. Steve Jobs was a good example. I'm sure Bill Gates is.
Hillary Clinton, I heard
Hillary
you say.
Hillary Clinton is.
Yeah,
I think she's high testosterone. She was actually interested in going into the Marines.
Yeah.
I mean, she's tough-minded, that girl.
Right.
And she married a high estrogen.
That's amazing. But when I heard you say that Bill Clinton was probably high estrogen.
Yeah. Well, these people are verbally skilled, people skills.
He's
whole world knows he can't stop negotiators.
Okay.
And directors. Directors of the high testosterone. And the negotiators of the high estrogen. And negotiators, they think broadly, contextually. And, of course, that's you. Because a person constantly interviewing people, constantly thinking outside the box, constantly looking for other ways of seeing a particular issue is going to be a high estrogen person.
Yeah.
Verbally skilled, people skills, can deal with ambiguity.
Yes.
very good nurturing, trusting, diplomatic generally, and mentally flexible. So they go for their opposite.
So we're explorers, right? But you said would we only date other explorers though? Because to me, who's going to pay the, you know, bill? Who's going to make sure we get placed on time, you know?
Right.
That's why I think maybe I've been more attracted to testosterone or the directors.
Well, the bottom line is we are all four. I mean, the problem with all these other personality questionnaires is that they put you in one bucket or another. These are brain systems. They're not buckets. So for example, my boyfriend and I are both high dopamine. That works fine. I am high estrogen and he is high testosterone.
Oh, it's perfect.
So that works fine too. He is higher serotonin. And in this case, I mean, he's not that high, or I wouldn't.
Right.
I'd have a hard time at it.
But
he's higher than I am, and so he plans everything, and it's sort of beautiful because yesterday we were driving, you know, through Pennsylvania, and man, he knew where we were going. He knew how long it was going to take to get there. He got our hotel room. You know, we got to the hotel too late, and we were looking forward to go to that restaurant. He immediately got on his phone and found another really nice place to go. All of that, if it had been you and I, we would have gotten out the door and started walking.
Exactly. This is why
we would have had a good time, too.
It would have been fun. We would have found someone that would invite us over for dinner, maybe.
Exactly. Whatever.
But this is the thing with my ex. I was saying this, that he's a great guy, but I'm like, no one planned anything. Like, I'm not a planner. And that I felt kind of like, it was a thing. So I was like, how do I figure this out now ahead of time? I'd never been in that situation before because he kept saying, why aren't you planning stuff? I'm like,
all
my life, I haven't been in this situation because I must have always been attracted to the person who plans.
Right.
So anyway, using this quiz.
And
for example,
must have always been with somebody who plans.
I guess so.
Because
the two
things,
of us were sitting on the couch.
Oh, wow.
Well, not a lot. I mean, he wanted to play video games. There was many things that didn't work. Uh-huh. But I'm not sure. I love him. James always like, really? With the boyfriend? But it's just interesting to learn.
Yeah. But what's really interesting is, and now, for example, he and I were going to the movies. This was months ago. And I said to him, I said, sweetheart, do you have any water in your backpack? And he said, yeah. I do. And I said, oh, great, we can drink it in the movie house. He said, no, we can't. You can't bring food or drink into a movie house. You got to buy it at the concession stand.
Oh, God, the serotonin, right?
Serotonin. He had a moment of serotonin.
But you're like, no, we'll just put it in the backpack.
I said, wow. But what's beautiful is, you know, I mean, modern psychology is very good. It's all very good. But the bottom line is we are blaming everything these days on our mother and our childhood. Some of who we are is just biological. He wasn't stubborn about that water because of the way he grew up. It's who he is. It's who he was born. It's who he's going to be. And under those circumstances, you just have to do a workaround. You don't have to go to a psychiatrist's office for 15 years to wonder why he can't bring water into a movie house. It's just who he is. And then I said, oh, okay. We buy the water at the, you know, at the concession stand. So the bottom line is, I mean, psychology has added a great deal about who we are and how to get along and et cetera. And it's all good. I mean, John Gottman is a brilliant man.
Yeah.
You know, about don't show contempt, don't threaten divorce, listen actively. All very good. But the bottom line is get to know who the person also is biologically. And you can make a good relationship. Now, for example, my man, he has these crazily wonderful ideas. I love them.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And somebody else would be very impatient with all this, but it works perfectly for me. And it's who he is. He's not going to change.
Right. And people don't change either.
No, they don't. We can adapt.
If they want to.
But, you know, I mean, could I ever make you uncurious? I don't think so.
No,
could I ever make you, I mean, if you and I went to Laos together, I mean, we'd plan a little bit. We'd figure out where we were staying.
Right.
But we wouldn't have a plan for what we're going to do every day for 3 weeks.
No.
We would not do that.
It would make me anxious. I'm already canceled day three.
We'd bring a little guidebook and we'd get, you know, at breakfast, we'd figure out what we were doing.
Are we going to travel together,
morning.
Helen? I feel like we need to do something together. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I asked Dr. Helen Fisher about attachment styles and what they mean for our relationships. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread, so here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. Can we go into like attachment styles a little bit? Because isn't it important to kind of know why you attach or anxious avoidant and things about that? I've just learned, I'm constantly like learning more about that too.
So am I. I'm really learning about that personally.
Fascinated by it.
Because I was
before you're 4 years old, and then how do you know if your mom wasn't looking into your eyes like you're everything to her? What if she kept leaving the room, and then you feel not loved, or if you had abuse, or
I think so. I mean, all of that's very worthwhile. And there's no question about it. What I'm trying to do is add the second half of the puzzle. A huge number of other people are adding that half of the puzzle. Your childhood, the traumas, who you are, how you expect the world to behave around you, what you're looking for in a partner. All of that is, I think, extremely valuable. But there's a second half of this puzzle which is who you're built to be.
Yeah.
And a good 40 to 60% of who you are does come out of your biology. Some people are they're homebodies. They're going to keep being homebodies unless they don't want to be a homebody. And then they marry somebody who wants to go out all the time and there may be some friction in it. But I mean, I think you just have to know not only who you are, but who your partner and your friends are.
So
now, for example, I've got a girlfriend who's very high testosterone. I'm very high estrogen. So I just don't do conflict. I just don't do conflict. I can't cope with it. I just don't do it. So one day recently, I met her for lunch. And I walked in and she said, "Helen, where'd you get that purse?" And I said, "Well, I bought it in the street." And she said, It looks cheap.
I have friends like that.
I said, "Marie." And she said, "Helen, I'm just trying to be honest with you. I'm trying to be helpful. But the high estrogen type takes it as an attack."
Yeah. Yes.
And when you understand that she's trying to be, I mean, I'm glad she said that.
Right.
But
like, I guess I'll
and one of the problems with the very high testosterone is that I don't fight back.
Right.
You know, and then one time I did fight back and I said, you know, and after when I fight back, it's perfectly fine with the high testosterone. They're used to that.
Right.
But then I go home and I say, "Why did I say that? Oh, I feel like such a heel.
Right.
Oh, I felt so aggressive."
Same.
Well, you know, and so, I mean, it's hard to be somebody that you really are not.
No, it's
we
so
can
true.
Act out of character. It's just tiring, and in my case, it can just be, you know, very socially anxious. Makes me socially anxious.
Same. It's so funny. I am totally conflict avoidant, and I guess, and I love what you're saying because a whole like 16 light bulbs went off. Because in a way, it's like I have friends like that too, and I kind of like it. Was like, "No, Emily, you're not." Where my friend came over, she must be high testosterone. She cleaned out my whole closet. She was helping me because I was too much stuff and clutter. And she's like, "This is cheap. You can't wear it again." And I was like, "Great." Like it didn't make me upset because I'm trying to get rid of stuff, but she's so, and I appreciate her directness. And she literally was like, "No, these are done. Get this rid of this." And we need people like that in our lives. But it's just funny thinking about the people we're attracted to. I mean, even as friends, but yeah, conflict. I've been like that forever.
It would be hard to travel with somebody like that for me.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Oh, no, but you're right. I know what you're saying.
As long as you can appreciate her. And she can appreciate you.
Good.
Does she appreciate your...
She does. She loves
well, that's important.
So, yes, we love
because
her.
I've got friends who just... They just think I'm weak because I'm sweet and I'm pleasant and I'm accommodating and I'm trying to level the playing field and they take that as weakness.
Do they tell you? But when you're...
No, they treat me that way.
Oh.
You know...
But then don't you feel like that you don't want to be around those friends?
Yeah,
then?
It's not long because it's too tiring.
It is exhausting.
It's exhausting.
The friends who are just draining, the ones that are draining... I think you learn this as you get older. You start to shed and...
Well,
you just
women
feel it.
Spend.
I can't even deal anymore if you're not. If it's conflict, every time you call me, I'm anxious. I see the phone call; it's going to be stressful. No.
Yeah. Well,
and
I mean, women hold on to their friends, particularly the high estrogen type.
Right.
They're going to hold on to their, you know, because they feel obliged.
Mm-hmm.
And
but then
I think women
drain on you.
Yeah,
can't.
I think women do an awful lot of things that they don't feel like doing.
Right. Well, it's true, but I guess as you learn that you don't have to do them anymore. But I guess if it's part of who you are, I will
I don't know.
Be a good
I haven't
friend.
Learned.
No, I'll always be a good friend, and I'm a pleaser too.
Yeah.
I guess you're making me
me
feel like
too.
It's okay. I'm a pleaser.
Yeah, me too.
Horrible pleaser.
Overplease.
Yeah.
Placator.
Thank you. Yeah. My friend finally said to me last week. She said, "Thank you. You just said thank you so much." I'm like, "I'm so appreciative though." She goes, "But after a while, it's diminishing returns. Like you could just say thank you once." And I'm
oh,
like,
that's interesting.
I was like,
see, because if you said thank you all the time with me, I'd get it.
Right. I'm like, "Oh my God, literally, I'm so grateful now to be seeing your house." I mean, I mean it though.
Yeah.
I
know. Same
it.
With me.
So who knows?
No, I get it.
Raised, but
I mean,
if
it was you and me, it was so funny. I was doing this years ago. I was doing this photography thing with the photographer, and it was a woman, and it was me. And we would get out of sync. So I would be moving when she was clicking, and I would say, "Oh, I'm sorry." And she'd say, "Oh, I'm sorry." And I'd say, "Oh, I'm sorry." And she'd say, "Oh, I'm sorry." And I'd say, "Oh, I'm sorry." And finally, the guy who was her crew said, "Why are the two of you constantly so sorry?" And I just said, We get it. Just don't bother us.
Right, we're speaking each other's language. Right. Okay, let's talk about millennials and they get such a bad rap, right? But it's
they
the
get
sense
such
of like
a bad rap, and it is so
apps
wrong.
And the whole thing
it is so wrong. I mean, first of all, these dating apps is just new technology. You have to learn how to use it. The only real algorithm is your own brain. You got to get out and meet the person. And these dating apps, they're not, you know, as I say this at Match, and they know it, and everybody else does too. These are not dating sites. They're not dating apps. They're introducing apps. They're introducing
the best,
sites.
Right?
And what they are is they just give you an awful lot of people, and then you have to sift through it. The problem is the human brain is not built until we even cope with so many choices. The brain has a sweet spot, apparently between 5 and 9 alternatives. And after that, you don't choose any. You just don't choose any. And I hear about these people who, you know, had 30 dates in 30 days. No wonder. I mean, they're just in a complete dither. They're not going to meet anybody. And so I basically ended up saying, you know, I mean, this, you just have to learn how to use this new system.
So and how the do we one do th- it then? I think,
number one, after you've met 9 people, stop and get to know at least one of those people more. Because all the data show that the more you get to know somebody, the more you like them, and the more you think that they are like you. So stop
and
after 9.
And for men and for women?
Oh, yes, definitely for men and for women. Okay. Men fall in love faster than women do. Men fall in love more often than women do. Men are 2.5 times more likely to kill themselves when a relationship is over. It's exactly the same brain circuitry in men as women, but men just fall faster because they're so visual.
Yeah.
So there's 2 things. A, stop after you've met 9 people and get to know one of them better. And second, think of reasons to say yes. The brain is built to say no. We've got this huge brain region behind your forehead, in a brain region linked with what we call negativity bias. The brain is built to think of the negative. For example, let's say we all go to a party and everybody says, oh, Emily, you look so great and this and that. And then somebody says, Emily, have you lost too much weight?
Uh-huh.
What are you going to remember? Just that.
Yeah, like, why is she talking about my weight? Yeah. I'm too skinny? Right.
So, you know.
That's just because for survival techniques?
Yes, right. Absolutely. But, I mean, for millions of years, it was adaptive to remember who did not like you.
Right, right.
And it's good to know who does like you, but if you forget who doesn't like you, you could be dead. So
right,
we remember the negative. And so when you go out with somebody, you know, on the first date, think of reasons to say yes. You know, overlook the fact that he's got brown shoes instead of black shoes, that he's wearing a t-shirt instead of a tie, whatever. I mean, if it's really obvious,
no,
then
right,
you got to get rid of it.
No, you're absolutely right. We're so picky. When people say they're so picky, yeah. Then you're not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, and women are pickier than men are for good Darwinian evolutionary reasons.
Right.
I mean, we're going to bear that baby, and that's going to be dangerous.
If the baby comes out in black shoes, then we're in trouble. But what about this whole thing about men decide who they're going to sleep with in 42 minutes or less or on a date or in 5 seconds?
Oh, women can decide within 3 minutes.
Too, right?
Absolutely.
But what if we decided that? But you're saying even then go out with them for a second time, even if we're not sure or we don't think we would?
If it's a maybe, go out again. Absolutely.
Okay. That's
and one thing that's interesting about, you know, in one study I did with Match, 36% of singles had sex with somebody before the first date. And older people get all pushed out of shape about that. And they think, oh, wow, you know, because in my day, because I'm older, you know, we had the first date long before you kiss somebody.
Right.
These days, they start out with just friends. They're just friends.
Right, right.
And then they move into friends with benefits. You learn a lot between the sheets. You get to know somebody. Then after a period of time, you go and tell friends and family. And then you have the official first date.
Right.
And so people say, oh, they're not having a first date early on.
Yeah.
No, they're not. They're being more careful with the first date. And these days, a first date is expensive. I mean,
right.
In my day, they picked me up after dinner and we played miniature golf or went parking or whatever. But these days, it can cost you $200 if you're in L.A. or in New York.
Right.
So you really want to know who you're spending your money and your time on. What we're really seeing is the extension of what I call the pre-commitment stage, this long period of getting to know somebody before you tie the knot.
Which I think makes sense.
I think that makes great sense. In fact, I did a study of 1,100 married people, and I said to them, one of the questions was, would you remarry the person you're currently married to? And 81% said yes. And I think that I've got 3 pieces of very solid data that the later you marry, the more likely you are to stay married. So what millennials are doing is they're getting their career in order. They're saving their money. They're sleeping around.
Yeah.
People sleep around. They're learning a whole lot about themselves.
Yeah.
But they're also learning in this pre-commitment stage how to get rid of the ones they don't want. They're learning more about their own sexuality, about who they want, what kind of sense of humor, where they want to go, all kinds of things they're learning about before they wed.
Right.
And I honestly think that this long period of pre-commitment and the opportunity to meet people on the internet, so you don't have to make, you know, foolish choices when you're 19. You can make a good choice when you're 29.
Yeah, I think
and
absolutely.
Have a whole lot of years to get to know yourself and other people. And then, so I honestly, I mean, you know, people do tend to divorce. I mean, I'm, as an anthropologist, in hunting and gathering societies, right. they did tend to have two or three husbands during the course of their lives. So there's nothing new about divorce.
Right.
But I do think that the later we marry, well, all the data show that the later we marry, the more likely we are to remain married.
Because we don't know ourselves in our I always say right. wait till you're 30, like just kind of what... I mean, right. if you can, wait till you're 30 right. because you got to figure out who you are. You're not really, not even really, you haven't made the decisions yet. You haven't been out there to date as many people to understand what might be
exactly
what might be right
useful.
For you.
And I love the fact that people are living together before they wed. You know, I mean, you get, you learn a lot with that too.
Yeah.
And that brings me to LAT.
Okay. Oh, we're circle back. LAT. What is LAT?
So it means living apart together. And I think it's largely for people who are not going to have children or don't want to have children now.
Okay.
And, for example, my boyfriend came to me and he said his son went off to college, and so now we could spend a good deal of time together. And the first thing he said to me is he said, you know, Helen, I want two or three nights to myself every week. Well, the first thing I did is I put my hand behind my back and I pulled it out. I said, what do you really want? You want four? You want seven? Right. I said, are we right. breaking up?
Yeah.
He said, no, you know, two to three nights a week. It's perfect for me. I have all these girlfriends.
Yes.
I have all these things
Same.
I want to do at night. Sometimes I just want to go to sleep and read a book. You know?
You don't want to have to be in bed with someone all the time. I understand that.
And so, of course, I mean, what we're probably doing is sustaining this in this romantic tradition, but we're both older.
Right.
Why not?
It makes so much sense. You have your life set. You're set in your ways.
Yeah. And, he has his house and I have mine, and, you know, he'll be here tonight. He was not here last night,
right.
which is perfectly fine.
You look forward to seeing him? You're not picking up his socks? He's not picking up yours?
Exactly.
Like, it's just, I think that
he has his kitchen. He's got contents of his icebox or, you know, fridge,
yeah.
and I mine. And what I really like about today is that we have alternatives.
Yes.
You can marry later. Women can have careers. You can get rid of things that don't work in order to make something that does work. You know, some of these people are polyamorous. Well, that's not for me. I couldn't do that. But
right.
It's not a matter of morality. I don't have the personality for
it. Right, right, right.
I'd be too jealous. I don't want to share. But the bottom line is there's people who are polyamorous.
Oh,
I mean,
every
gay,
the
queer, the, you know, older people with LAT, et cetera, et cetera. I think that we have every reason to be able to build the kind of partnerships that we want.
So then why is it still so hard then, you think, for some people to what about when we say, okay, going back to millennials, who they don't want to catch feelings or they don't
right.
want to.
That's a great term, isn't
but how
it?
I don't want to catch feels. I never heard that before, you guys. I mean, it was like before, like 5 years ago. But what is that? I mean, is that meaning, is that protective measure? Or do you think that that's some way I like to think, like they never, their friends aren't doing it, so they're not looking in. Like, I don't understand that. Because I caught feelings a lot in my 20s. I couldn't help it. I couldn't
stop
neither.
It. Yeah, no, so, I think they can't either. But they don't want to get committed.
They
don't want to get into that long-term commitment. Another thing that you just said is you had never heard that term, catching feelings. The millennials are adding all these words to our vocabulary that I really, really like. I mean, even this thing, define the relationship, DTR.
Yeah.
Now, in my day, you went out with somebody maybe for months, if not years, and you really had no idea if they were going to ask you to marry him.
Right.
Nothing was defined.
Is there a ring in his pocket?
And now it's defined. And in fact, I asked on Match, when do you raise that issue of define the relationship? And I was astonished that they said after about 4 months, I wouldn't dare do it. That seems very early for me.
Oh, really?
But
They
want to know what's going on. They really do. They this term about being ghosted and
ghosted and benched and
catching
all the
feelings
things.
And all these things.
Yeah.
They're defining all this. I really think that's terrific.
Yeah, I think so too. Because otherwise, you're just like going in this abyss. And then
exactly.
also people also still make assumptions that, well, we slept together, so we must be committed. Or we've gone on three dates and that person's probably not dating anyone, even though still they're not dating anyone else.
Right.
And like, don't make any assumptions about the person you've gone on three dates with. Like if
right.
you haven't talked about it yet.
Right.
That's when you get jealous and all these things happen. So figure it out. And I think the sooner we realize that there's so many options, it's more accepted right now too to say to someone, I'm casually dating, I'm in friends with benefits, I want this
right.
or that. And then you won't be spending a year with someone who doesn't want the same
exactly.
thing you do. So it makes a lot more sense. Going back to this living apart together thing, I just want to talk about how that is such a great thing for even couples who are married and living together now
right.
could still learn from that. Because I've always had this hunch that like, when as a young, you know, in my 20s, I thought that makes so much sense that to have that separation or to kind of, when we talk about how women crave novelty and excitement and all the newness, it kind of makes sense to, even if you're even living together, how you can kind of still instill some of that separateness. And it just makes
right.
sense. And I
It's so interesting because, I do know people who are living together and own the property together and, you know, own the apartment together and they've lived. And very often, at least in New York, they'll have to even mesh their schedules because she's going out on Tuesday night with her girlfriends and she's going to the theater on Thursday with such and such. And what's he doing? And so they have to. I like that.
Yeah.
I like the fact that, you know, I mean, what is it? As Khalil Gibran, the poet, said, he said, you know, put some space in your togetherness.
Yes.
And
that's what
we really
need.
Weren't built for 24/7.
We weren't.
Even in hunting and gathering societies, women would go off to another camp for even a few weeks. I mean, they traveled. And they didn't always travel together.
Yeah. I mean, the couples I know who have this are like, he travels or she travels for work every third week. It's great. Like, they really, like, you get to miss someone.
Yeah.
I think that's
Yes,
important.
I've got two girlfriends who, during the week, the husband works in Boston and the wife works in New York.
Yeah.
And then they're together on the weekend.
Perfect.
So, you know. Yeah.
It's like long distance, but I mean, I think that's how
it works. I think it's nice in the beginning. I don't know. I mean,
but with kids, it makes it a little more challenging.
Right.
Like, we're talking like.
Right.
When you have kids, it can be a lot
Well,
harder.
So it's so interesting because I was talking to a man who's recently married and has a child who's now something like 10 months old. And I talked to him about LAT, living apart together. And he said, oh, if I could have just one night, one night every 2 weeks, just to myself. I said, I wouldn't go out with other women. I just one night in a hotel room. And immediately my friend said, oh, I bet his wife wouldn't like that. And I thought to myself, maybe she would.
She probably would. Probably the best thing that ever happened. Maybe switch. He's home every other week and someone gets a hotel room.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we need that. God, it makes so
no,
much sense.
No, we aren't built for all this. You know, I mean, but the nice thing about these days is we can do that. I mean, you just have to be honest about it and work it out and build it up, build it together. And that's why my man was so great. I mean, I wouldn't have dared to say that. But
right. We wouldn't have said that because it would have been like, right.
Yeah, because.
But he needed the order at the Serotonin.
Yes. I never thought of that, Emily, until this second.
Yeah.
He needed the structure of it.
He needs to understand.
Well done.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, I'm upset. All your strategies
I not even thought
sense.
Of that. But he also had a lot of therapy because of very bad partnership in his past. I had chalked it up to the bad partnership, but I think that you're right.
He needed
the structure.
Know, like, Tuesday nights, which night are you coming? Yeah. There you go.
Thank you, Emily.
Oh my God, whatever I can do. When we come back, Dr. Helen Fisher and I explore what goes on in our bodies when we have an orgasm. Let's talk about orgasms, oxytocin, and attachment. So how orgasms bond us. Because I always say that on the show, but I feel like I've heard you talk about it in a way that how it's just important to just touch in other ways, just the importance of that
right.
bonding
so,
attachment.
You know, I mean, sex is good for you. It's good for you in many ways, and you can say all those ways better than I can. I mean, it's good for the skin. It's good for the lungs. It's good for the bladder. It's good for the sense of humor. I mean, it's just good for you if you're with the right person. And in fact, you know, any touching of the genitals drives up the dopamine system and can help you feel feelings of intense romantic love for the person. But with orgasm, there's a real flood of oxytocin and vasopressin. And those brain chemicals are linked with feelings of deep attachment to somebody. So orgasm is good. And in fact, when I ask Match, I do this annual study with Match called Singles in America. We do not poll the Match members. We poll the American public. So it's a representative sample of Americans based on the U.S. Census. And almost 70% of women do not regard it as good sex unless they have an orgasm. I mean, the old days where you're supposed to lie back and think of England are over.
Right, exactly.
Women want sexual gratification just as men do.
But can it get confusing, though, too, just if you people think that they can't be with several people because women are like, well, if I have an orgasm with them, I'm totally attached and I can't be with anyone else.
Well, I don't know. I never thought of that.
But
I do think that it brings you closer to somebody.
Yes.
I mean, that's one of the reasons that people, sex is not casual. Unless you're so drunk that you can't remember it, it's not casual.
Right.
I mean, things happen. You learn a great deal about a person. I mean, you learn, you know, not only size and shape and motion, but whether they're kind, whether they can listen, whether they can accommodate, whether they want to please, whether they do have a sense of humor, whether they're, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So you learn a lot between the sheets.
Yeah.
And I do think that once you get into bed with somebody, you know, I mean, sex, you know, triggers 5 of the 12 cranial nerves. I mean, you see them, you hear them, you smell them, you taste them, you feel them. I mean, the whole brain becomes activated by the whole experience. And of course, with orgasm is one of the most powerful feelings the human animal can have.
Right.
So, you know, it's good to have a partner that you like in bed. And, you know, I mean, it's not the only part of a relationship that you can have.
Right. Just to remind couples that, like, the touch is important, too, just touching and orgasm.
Absolutely.
If you're not having couples, like, oh, we don't need any more sex. So usually there's one person that says that. But
yeah,
you do. You have to continue to connect or figure out
a way to do it. I mean, you're a sex therapist, mm-hmm. but I would think that, I mean, I've always heard from sex therapists that that's one of the biggest problems when one individual wants more than
the
biggest other.
Problem here. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not a therapist, but if I was with somebody, I would be tempted to say, listen, this is an important part of a relationship.
Yeah.
If you're not interested, maybe you should try taking some testosterone.
That's been amazing, the supplements.
Or understand that this is a meaningful part for this other person and that you should try to accommodate. And the more sex you have, the more you want.
Exactly.
The less you have, the less you want.
Right. But we forget after time. Like, we haven't had an orgasm for a while.
Right. So, no, and it's very good for the body and the mind. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's a very important... Now, I mean, there's some people who aren't terribly interested in sex and they marry somebody who's also not terribly interested in sex and that's fine.
That is
whatever.
Fine.
Probably not quite as healthy.
Right.
But it's fine for them.
I'm obsessed with your personality types now. Are you the only one who pulled about these 4 types?
Yes. I'm the only one.
I think everyone, I'm literally all I can think about now. I'm putting everyone into personality types and why
it's an entirely new idea. And the business world really likes it. I'm making more and more speeches in business because, you know, I mean, how do these different kinds of people innovate? How do they lead? How do you build a team?
Same quiz that's on your
absolutely.
Site, the same one for businesses. I mean, we should figure that
out. Yeah, because this is not about love. This is about personality.
Well, right.
You know? And so, I mean, for example, one of the problems in business is that people, let's say you're building a team, you tend to choose teammates who are like yourself because you can understand them.
Right.
Now, if you and I were going to Laos, we might want to have a third person who gets the airline tickets.
Exactly, right.
We could rein them in.
Yeah.
We don't want an agenda for every single day we're there. So it's important to build a team with some of the people that you are not like. I mean, I am all for cultural diversity, but how about diversity of mind? Putting some people in your team who do not think the way you do. I mean, I've started this new company called NeuroColor, and we've got a second generation personality questionnaire, and we go into businesses and we train people on understanding these 4 styles of thinking and behaving and how to build a team and how you want to be talked to. I don't like to be talked. I don't like it when the testosterone tells me, where'd you get that purse?
Yeah.
I don't, or that shirt is cheap. Get rid of it. I mean, I can do it, but it's tiring for me. I'm trying to be sweet and smile you know.
But you might need that guy to talk to your salespeople.
Exactly.
But not you.
The co-founder and I, his name is Dave Labneau, and he's very high testosterone. I'm very high estrogen. There's a little clash there at times, but we're both very high dopamine. We need a high serotonin person. We need the builder. And there's times that we don't know what to do. And so we will call. We've got another 2 people in the company who are very high serotonin. And we call them and ask them, what would you do under this circumstance? What do you think about this? Because we are not going to see it the way a high serotonin builder would see it.
It's
very valuable to have people around who can do the things that you don't do and also get them in the right job.
Yeah.
You know, I was once out at Visa, the credit card company, and everybody had taken my personality questionnaire. And I could see that there was this one woman took my personality questionnaire. She was the head of the accounting department, a big, big part of Visa. But on my questionnaire, she was all explorer, all high dopamine. And of course, in accounting, you're a bean counter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's high serotonin. And it's a very different kind of task.
Yeah.
And so I pulled her aside because I didn't want to embarrass her in front of her colleagues and everything. I said, tell me, which is more the real you, the you at work or the you outside of work? And she said, oh, outside of work. you know, which was my questionnaire right. showed. And she said, work is very tiring. And it's because she's having to fit herself yeah. into a role that she doesn't naturally play.
But did she like it? Or was she like, oh, thank you, I haven't wanted to be here.
It's just interesting
to look at that.
Yeah.
The people getting yourself in wrong places that to kind of go towards where your skills are.
That would be the leaders of the company, to try and right. put people where they will do their best.
So
and people
helpful.
Will do their best. And now, for example, with innovation, I mean, you are going to think outside the box and come up with a new idea, a better mousetrap.
Right.
Yeah, that's what you're going to do. But you want a nice high serotonin person to create the process, innovate a new process for right. how it's done. That's going to make you too impatient.
Right.
You're going to want a high-tech guy to build the whatever
the testosterone,
it is.
The testosterone, the teeth.
Yeah, and then you're going to want a high estrogen, which is also you,
right.
who to sell it, to explain it,
yeah.
to advertise it, to et cetera, et cetera. So just getting people in the right place
is so
very
sense.
Valuable.
I'm so glad Vince yeah. is picking this up, and couple, and people dating.
Before you go on a date.
I mean, you know, people have Myers-Briggs and stuff on their percentage, but not everyone takes it. Not everyone gets it.
Well, one of the things that's very hard to remember.
Yeah,
I am an ITP, you know, it's yeah. very difficult to remember. It's much easier to remember explorer, builder.
It's really smart.
Director,
that.
Negotiator. it's hard to remember. But also, it puts you in buckets. And the bottom line is, you can act out of character. I can do serotonin. I mean, I pay my bills every
right.
month. I do get
I
my
do
schedule
it.
Under control, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't feel like doing it.
Right, ever.
Ever.
Right.
And, I mean, what takes my boyfriend 2 seconds to go onto the internet to buy an airplane ticket? I'll wait days before I make the call.
Yeah, days.
Days.
Someone has to come sit next to me on my couch. My says, I'm like, okay, we're doing it now. We're doing it now.
Just, I know. It's
anxiety.
Awful.
Yeah. But that's just who I am. I'm not going to change it.
No.
I feel so much better.
Yeah.
Just embracing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny. And then dating and then realizing what's important to you and then finding people who can kind of fulfill that
exactly.
part of you.
I mean, I had one man that I've hung around with for years. I mean, we're just friends. I've probably known him for 15 years. We have gone to the same restaurant for 15 years. And he always wants to go. He's just a high serotonin guy. And I thought to myself over these past years, you know, he would never be a lover. I mean, he's barely been to Europe. You know,
he just
likes
steady.
To stay home. He likes the steady.
And that's biology, truly. It's not
absolutely.
Anything about your parents raised you. They,
it
at
could,
all?
You know, I, it's so interesting. When my book on this came out, Why Him, Why Her,
yeah.
my editor for the book called me up. He had just read the first draft. He said, you know, Helen, I finally understand my son.
Yeah.
And my editor was very high explorer, dopamine, risk-taking, novelty-seeking, curious, creative, spontaneous, energetic. But his son was the high serotonin.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to stay home, and he was a cautious kid. He didn't want to go out on all these adventures that his father wanted to go on. And he said, I love my son, but I never understood
right.
him until now.
Right, you just get it that way. Okay, that makes, but who knows if it's because of the way he raised him or if it's because...
Oh, it's because I think he's a
biology?
High serotonin kid.
Yeah, just how
biology.
It is.
I mean,
biology
I've got
makes sense.
My
did you look measure their brain? You measure their brains, right?
But yes, I did, and that's why this is my questionnaire is so unusual.
Right.
I got all the data from looking at the brain literature to make the questionnaire, but then I put two groups of people who had taken the questionnaire into the brain scanner to prove that what I was measuring with my questionnaire actually. Corresponded with what was in the brain. So if I were to put you into my machine, first I'd give you the questionnaire. You'd score very high on my dopamine
right.
scale, the Explorer. And then when I looked at your brain, I'd see a lot of activity in the whole dopamine pathway. I would also see activity in the brain region for empathy, because that's estrogen, and with verbal skills, because that's estrogen. So I would be able to see your brain and see, yes, that's why it's different
that
from the
sense.
Myers-Briggs and
right.
from all
right.
the
no, I like
Myers-Briggs
it.
Actually is quite right in some ways, but they don't know it. And for example, I don't know how much you know about the Myers-Briggs.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, when they're measuring the degree to which you are feeling versus thinking.
Right.
What they're really measuring, they don't know it, but they're really measuring the traits of the testosterone versus estrogen system. And when they're the perceiving versus judging, P versus J, they're really measuring the traits of the dopamine versus the serotonin system. Once again, they don't know it, but that's what they're doing.
You, like, simplified it, that it sounds like.
What I did is I got the biology
right.
to it, but then they put you in a bucket. You're either perceiving or judging. They got one thing wrong.
Right.
And in fact, everybody's gotten one thing wrong,
right.
I think. I've never written about this, but I do measure it in my neurocolor
what'd
questionnaire.
What did they get wrong?
I don't think anybody in business or in psychology or layman actually understand extroversion versus introversion. I think that Isabel Myers had it right, of Myers and Briggs, in that it's where you get your energy. Now, I'm an introvert. I get my energy from being alone. But if I go into a party, I'm talkative, I'm laughing, I can be the life of the party, et cetera, et cetera. And what they do is they confuse introverts with sort of wallflowers and extroverts with sort of the life of the party. But I think they're two separate scales. The degree to which you get your energy, which is introversion versus extroversion, and a whole second scale, which is outgoing versus reserved.
Yeah, now, that makes so much sense.
I am an outgoing introvert.
Yeah, this is a whole new thing. I think that
and
makes
my,
so much sense.
And my brain scanning partner is a reserved extrovert. She has to have people around. There are people constantly going in and out of her house. There's dogs, there's cats, there's people, there's you name it, there's people. But she's reserved around people.
That's so interesting. That makes sense. It's too simple to say introvert. Because I love being alone, but I'm an extrovert. But yeah, I need my alone time because around people all the time. But I get energy from people, I think.
Yeah. And Myers-Briggs have that wrong. And I think the other thing that they've got wrong is putting you in a bucket, because we're all a combination of all of them. It's the matter of degree. Now, my boyfriend is particularly high on the dopamine and the testosterone skills, but he's got some serotonin in him. Myers-Briggs would not pick that up.
Oh, okay.
And that serotonin in him has been valuable. I mean, he makes the plans. He actually likes it. I keep on apologizing. Oh, I'm so sorry. I never get us the hotel room. I never do this.
He likes it, though. He needs to know that it's happening, that you have a place to go. Maybe he enjoys looking at it. I mean, my mom has had that of a very similar, like, he loves the planning and doing it. So he appreciates it. I want to talk to you about rejection.
Yeah.
Because you talk about
painful.
The most painful. You say it's the most painful experience a human can endure, and I agree. Can we talk about that a little bit, the phases of rejection and what happens in romantic love and getting rejected?
So after I put my first group of people into the brain scanner who were happily in love, and that got a lot of press, and I said to them, you know, Helen, that's really not very important. What's really important is to find out what happens when you've been rejected in love. I mean, that's when people murder or commit suicide or slip into clinical depression or stalk. I mean, if I'm going to make any contribution on this planet, it's going to be among people who are rejected in love. So we put 15 people into the scanner, and we found activity in a lot of brain regions. Among them, three brain regions linked with craving. The basic brain region linked with addiction. It's an addiction.
Yeah, you become addicted to the, you obsess, right.
And certainly also a brain region linked with feelings of intense romantic love. I mean, you don't stop loving somebody because they dumped you. In fact, you can love them more.
Right.
And a brain region linked with feelings of deep attachment, of course. And a brain region linked with physical pain. Not only the anxiety that goes along with physical pain, but a brain region that also becomes active when you have tooth pain. But you go to the dentist, the tooth pain's gone, a week later you've forgotten it. You don't forget it somebody a week after they've dumped you. It can go on for months or years.
That's
so basically this, I know. When I was writing my book on that, Why We Love, I thought to myself, why do we go through this? I mean, why isn't it easier to break up? I mean, everybody gets dumped. And I thought to myself, well, look at what you're losing. I mean, you're not only losing your daily routines, your daily habits, somebody to make love to and laugh with, but you could be losing your children or the dog or the house and economic problems. And, where do you go at Christmas or Hanukkah or wherever? You lose
a
great deal.
And touch, too, and company. Yeah,
absolutely. You can lose friends. You can lose neighbors. You can lose a lot. But what you're really losing is a reproductive partner. You've lost your opportunity to send your DNA on with this individual. And if you've already had children with the person, you're losing a parent.
Right. What if you don't want children? What if you're older and you still hurts?
It always hurts.
It always hurts.
I mean, it always hurts. It always is so painful. But it is a process. I mean, psychiatrists say, this is not my work, psychiatrists say that, the first thing is the protest stage. You just try to win the person back.
Mm-hmm.
You can try to seduce. You can try to insult them. You walk in and say, I'll never see you again. You have a whole big drama. You walk out. 10 minutes later, you're back to do it again.
Right.
It's an obsession. And you're trying to win the person back. You can seduce. You can try and make them jealous. You can do a lot of things. And then after a while, you just flat out give up. And that's the second stage. You move from protest to resignation. And then you sort of slump onto the bed and you just lie there and you cry, or you drink too much, mm-hmm. you drive too fast, you hole up and watch TV. And after a while, that begins to fade and you move into recovery. Right. So it really is a whole pattern. But, you know, men and women do it somewhat differently.
Mm-hmm.
Women try to negotiate a great deal, whereas men will try to make a woman jealous or go out and get another relationship almost immediately to try to make the person jealous. So they'll do it somewhat differently. But
is it true you think that men do it like that, but then they feel it later?
I saw just as much sorrow in the men that I put into the brain scanner as the women. They don't talk about it as much. Women talk about it too much.
I agree.
And what they're doing then is re-traumatize. I mean, it's some, you do want to talk about it to a point, but after a while, you need to stop talking about it, because every time you raise the issue again with friends and family, you're re-traumatizing yourself. Right. You're reliving it. At some point, and that happened to me once with this guy. I mean, it was ridiculous. He was constantly leaving me. And finally, you know, I said to my girlfriends, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Because I'm just re-traumatizing
myself.
Right.
It's so helpful, right? Yeah. And then you heal. Time does heal all wounds.
Yeah.
I guess that is true. But would you think...
We've been able to prove that, actually. These rejected people, the longer you get away from the moment of initial rejection, the less activity there is in a brain region linked with feelings of attachment. So we've been able to prove that in the brain, time does heal. But if women talk about it too much... Men often don't talk about it enough.
Right, right.
And so they don't process it. And there was this one guy, you've got to sort of build a story that you can then get rid of. And there was this one guy that left me. I could not figure out why he left. I could not figure it out. And I finally said to myself, and I was never going to know because he was gone. So I thought, I finally said to myself, Helen, make it up. Just make up your story. Make up the story of why he left, or what went wrong, what you did, make it up. And so that you can, once you get a story, you can throw the story out.
Wow.
You can bury the story.
And that worked. So, you just think about it, you're like, this
yeah,
is what happened.
To this day, I don't know why I left, but right. But I got my story.
Because we'll never know either. Like, even because that's the thing about the apps,
he probably wouldn't
too.
Even tell me.
Right.
If he just disappeared,
kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, but
or he'd make
apps,
it up, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but we make up so many stories in our head about things, too. Like, even on the apps, now we get more rejected. Or we had a great date and they ghosted.
Yeah.
Like, you're never going to know anyway. And if you spend 2 hours with someone and you've spent 10 days obsessing about it, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, a point, just move on. You got to move
on. Right.
Got
to move on.
The rejection
and
is
makes
so
something
hard,
up.
It makes sense, though, why it's so hard.
You know,
yeah,
make it up. I mean, that's what I would do. I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist or a therapist like you are, but you know, if I was on the internet and I had a really wonderful date with somebody, or two wonderful dates with somebody, and geez, I thought it was great, and then they said to me, well, I'll call you next week, and then they never do, I would think, if you really had no idea, I don't know, I mean, just off the top of my head, I guess I would say, well, maybe his girlfriend came back. Maybe,
exactly.
Maybe it doesn't have to do with me.
It doesn't have to do with you. That's why I tell people all the time. First of all, you'll never know, but just assume it has nothing to do with you. How could it after one date, two dates anyway, or if it does, you'll never know.
Yeah, never
know.
It's
much healthier, though, not to beat yourself up and go to the negative.
Exactly.
Which is what we're wired to do.
Right, exactly. People would say, well, love is dead. You can't kill love. It's a brain system. It evolved over 4 million years ago. It's going to be with us as long as we survive as the species. 4 million years from now, it's like the fear system or the hope system. It's a basic brain system we will always love.
Well, I love that you've made your life work out of studying love. It's been so helpful for so many people, including myself.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank
me
you.
Me too.
Thank you, Dr. Helen Fisher. That's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to podcasts, and share this with a friend or a partner. Believe me, if you got something out of this, they will too. We release 2 to 3 episodes a week. Find me on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. It's all at Sex with Emily. If you want to ask me a question about sex, dating, or relationships, you can email me feedback@sexwithemily.com or sexwithemily.com/askemily. And check out my website. We have so many articles on there helping you better sex. And you can check out our guides at sexwithemily.com/guides for free guides that will give you expansive tips and activities. Sign up for our weekly emails because, hey, I've been told I give really good emails. Was it good for you? Email me feedback@sexwithemily.com.